We begin with a few more quotations from our founding fathers. Question with boldness even the existence of God, because if there is one, he must more approve the honoring of reason than that of blindfolded fear. Thomas Jefferson.
I think the system of morals and his religion, as Jesus left them to us, the best the world ever saw or is likely to see. But I apprehend it has received various corrupting changes, and I have some doubts as to his divinity, though it is a question I do not dogmatize upon. Benjamin Franklin.
Of all the animosities which have existed among people, those which are caused by differences of sentiments in religion appear to be the most inveterate and distressing, and ought most to be deprecated. George Washington.
And our final words from Benjamin Franklin. Imitate Jesus and Socrates.
I wish to begin simply by thanking all of you who are here this morning. It's a three-day weekend. It's a beautiful three-day weekend. And yet, here you are. The minister loves the intrepid attenders of church most of all. There are those who like to claim that ours is a Christian nation, founded by Christians with specifically Christian values, and that we should once again become the Christian nation our founders fully intended us to be. This is a serious misreading of history on many levels. I suspect that most of our founders would have called themselves Christian, but they would claim more primary allegiance to reason and freedom. They were as much children of the Enlightenment as they were followers of Jesus, and they were decidedly non-creedal and non-dogmatic. They were, in a word, Unitarian. Indeed, some of them were avowedly Unitarian, while others were more of the small U Unitarian variety. Our founders were also decidedly in favor of the separation of church and state. They were, however, not anti-religion at all. Indeed, they thought religion was a great social good, a kind of civilizer of human society, calling us to our higher and better selves. Their intent was not to do away with the church or religion. Rather, they wanted to found a nation and culture where reason and free inquiry held more sway than miracle and mystery. They knew the effect that reason and inquiry could have on religion, but they certainly didn't see it as the end of religion by any means. They advocated a separation of church and state not so much to protect the state from religion, which we seem to look at it that way often now, but rather to protect religion from the state. They knew all too well the dangers of wedding government and religion, and saw clearly how a state-sponsored, or worse, a state-mandated religion hampered freedom of expression and thought for all. And they saw how easily religion could be co-opted, corrupted, and misused by those in power. It was as true then as it is today, as it ever has been. Yet this does not make our founders Christian in the modern conservative sense. Indeed, present-day conservative Christians might shudder if they knew what most of our founders believed, and how profoundly they were influenced by Unitarian thought. The founders believed in a kind of civic religion that encouraged good citizenship. This civic religion was very much like the Unitarianism that was just beginning to stir at the time of the founding of this new nation. Jenny Corder, the former moderator of the Unitarian Universalist Association, has said, "I want folks in our congregations to know that if there is a candidate for the great American faith, it is us. Take a look at who signed the Declaration of Independence, and you see our names there. Three of the first six American presidents were Unitarian, and I'm pretty proud of the country that we helped build." Our founders were children of the Enlightenment who brought reasoning minds to their religious lives. Jefferson rewrote the New Testament to make it more true to what he believed Jesus said and meant. He pretty much cut and pasted, and he pretty much took out the miracles. He wrote, "I believe that he who observes those moral precepts in which all religions concur will never be questioned at the gates of heaven as to the dogmas in which they all differ." Well, Jefferson never declared a denominational identity, and when we claim him as a Unitarian, it's a little bit of a stretch. Even for all of that, he did attend Joseph Priestley's Unitarian Church in Philadelphia, along with many signers of the Declaration of Independence and framers of the Constitution, like John Adams and Benjamin Franklin. Adams, perhaps the most explicitly Unitarian among our founders, was very clear that Christianity was not the only valid expression of religious truth. He wrote of a future when, quote, "translations into English and French, Spanish and German and Italian, of sacred books, of the Persians, the Chinese, the Hindus, etc., 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 would be available to all." So then, he went on, "our grandchildren and great-grandchildren may compare notes and hold fast all that is good." The treaty with Tripoli, which is essentially a document agreeing that neither nation would pirate each other's ships on the open sea, carries with it, of course, many ironies for us today. It is said that Adams, upon reading the treaty, quote, "signed it proudly and proclaimed it to the nation." George Washington was more of a man of action than thought, not as much a philosopher as the other founders. Yet he was also not an ideologue when it came to religion. In speeches, Washington rarely used the word God, instead using more than 50 different phrases, like giver of life and superintending providence. All were Christian, yet not in an exclusivist way. They did not believe that any single religion held all the truth, and they were well aware how easily claims of ultimate truth could lead to the very tyranny they had rebelled against. And Jefferson really did say, "There is not a young man now living in the United States who will not die a Unitarian." By almost any measure, he turned out to be wrong. And yet, I wonder. A Unitarian ethos of free inquiry and free religious expression did find its way into the founding documents of this nation, find its way into the minds and hearts of many, many Americans who do not call themselves Unitarian. Did you know that both Martin Luther King Jr. and Barack Obama have significant ties to Unitarian Universalism? Coretta Scott King has said she attended Unitarian churches before she met Martin. And together they came to our churches when King was studying in Boston. There was a great deal about our liberal faith, especially the freedom of inquiry, that appealed to King. So much so that at one time he considered joining us. Yet he knew that he could only lead his liberation movement, the movement to which he was profoundly called, he could only lead it from within the Black Church. Unitarian Universalism would not work for him, either culturally or ultimately theologically. When Obama was growing up with his grandmother in Hawaii, he attended Sunday school at the First Unitarian Church of Honolulu. His grandmother's funeral a few years back was held at that church. Some lament that our faith was unable to keep such people in our ranks. They wonder why we didn't speak powerfully enough to them, or why our message is not somehow profound enough to continue to inspire them. And these are significant questions. Yet it seems to me that we are still the religion of the American ethos in many ways. And I am glad that we are a part of what inspired King, both King and Obama, if only a part. I'm glad of it. When I hear Obama speak with a voice of tolerance, reason, and compassion, with a fire for justice, I am proud, knowing that our faith tradition had something to do with it. Charles Darwin is another who attended a Unitarian Sunday school in his youth. And I don't claim that it was this Unitarian ethos that created an open, tolerant, and reasoned ethic in either Darwin or in Obama. Yet I am confident that it helped. And I'm proud of the continuing influence we have in the culture, an influence that arises because of our deep American roots. Though I do wish it were more consciously recognized and that we had a higher profile in the public square today, it is still true that our core beliefs lie at the center of this grand American experiment. And it is from this place that I can find my own national pride and patriotism arising. I love so much about America and so much about being an American. Memorial Day has become one of those holidays that is often accompanied by grand expressions of American pride and patriotism. Yet I come to Memorial Day with mixed emotion. For this really is a day not so much for pride, but when we are to reverently honor and tenderly mourn those who have fallen, given their lives in defense of this country. I grow weary, however, of hearing that they died to keep us free. I'm not sure what that means. We have been through too many meaningless wars. I do believe that our national ideals are worth living, are worthy of living, fighting, and even dying for. Yet I come to doubt that the women and men of our armed forces have died in the cause of freedom. Sometimes in history, such sacrifice is much clearer, but in the wars since Vietnam, and especially the wars in the Gulf and Afghanistan, moral clarity is decidedly lacking. It seems that our soldiers have died to defend our access to oil. That is, in its way, dying to defend our way of life, just not the part of our way of life that I think is worth defending. Let me be very clear here. I intend no dishonor to our soldiers in questioning why they are fighting in questioning what they are fighting and dying for. Indeed, I intend them only further honor by such questions. For I think we dishonor them when we don't ask those questions. For too many of us, it's too easy to forget that we are still a country at war. Too little is asked of us. And it is far too easy to let the burdens and sacrifice of the wars be carried by a very few. Should I say that I am grateful or proud of the soldiers who gave their lives? That's not quite right either. Perhaps it's more accurate to say that I am humbled by their sacrifice. Memorial Day does not make me feel especially patriotic. It makes me sad. I am saddened by war and its cost. I feel the great loss of so many lives. I grieve for them and their families. And part of what is so challenging about standing in these truths is that we do have great ideals and values that are worth sacrificing for. When I say that, I do not mean to sound like an American exceptionalist who thinks ours is the greatest nation on earth. Yet I do believe that when we live by the ideals upon which we are founded, we are a great nation. And I believe we can be a great nation and not need to be the greatest somehow. So may we honor those who have fallen in military service by living into the ideals of this nation more fully. May we focus less on our freedoms and more on our responsibilities, more on what being an American asks of all of us. That our young men and women have died far too often for less than lofty ideals does not mean that our ideals are less worthy. It means that as Americans, we can never rest on our laurels. We must constantly be on guard against the trap of exceptionalism, by which we too often justify all manner of deeds which fall very short of our ideals. That is why it's always good to sing the hymn, "This is my song," on such occasions. Even as we hear our Star-Spangled Banner, let us be reminded of the ideals and beauty of other nations as well. I am proud to live in a nation founded on ideals of freedom and reason. I am proud to be a Unitarian Universalist, knowing the role that our liberal religious heritage has played in the birthing and the living of those ideals. Very proud. And yet, on Memorial Day, may we focus less on our pride than what we can do to honor the lives of those who have sacrificed in our name. On this Memorial Day, may we become better Americans. Amen. And blessed be.